All right, so have you ever felt like when you're trying to figure out what's going on with a corporate takeover that it's like a magic trick where the really important information just disappears, right in front of you, especially when we're talking about securities law. The rules about what companies have to disclose, they can be surprisingly hard to understand.
Absolutely.
Today, we're going to dive deep into a really important case that helps make these rules clearer, particularly when, we're talking about billions of dollars on the line. The case is Prudent Real Estate Trust versus John Camp Realty Incorporated.
Oh, good one.
This decision from the Second Circuit Court of Appeals is like a guidebook for understanding what companies have to disclose when they're making a tender offer to buy another company.
Exactly. And it's a case from 1979 that still has a lot of relevance today for anybody who's interested in securities law. For you listening out there, it's really important to understand the principles that came out of this Prudent case because they help us understand this whole idea of materiality in securities law, which is basically like what information is so important that investors need to know it to make a good decision. And this case also shows us how courts can step in and use tools like injunctions to make sure that everybody's playing fair when one company is trying to buy another one. So we've gone through all the court documents and legal analysis to break this down for you and bring you the key points.
Perfect. Well, let's set the stage here. So imagine it's 1979 and you're a shareholder in Prudent Real Estate Trust. All of a sudden, John Camp Realty Incorporated comes along and says, "Hey, we want to buy all of your shares for $7 each," which is a pretty nice premium, like 40% higher than the market price. Sounds pretty tempting, right?
Yeah, definitely on the surface, that kind of offer would be hard to resist for most shareholders. But like you often see in these complex financial deals, the devil's in the details. And in this particular case, it was all about who was really pulling the strings at John Camp.
So this is where things get a little interesting. John Camp itself wasn't like a simple, straightforward company. They had this kind of unusual power structure. The biggest chunk of their financing, 80% to be precise, was coming from a company called John Camp Netherland Antilles NV.
Text.
And that company was controlled by a guy named Robert Campeau. But here's the catch. The remaining 20% of the funding, and maybe even more importantly, the day-to-day control over how John Camp actually ran its business, that was all in the hands of another company called the Pacific Company,
Interesting.
which was headed by John Wharton.
Okay, so you've got Campeau as like the main money man, right? Putting up most of the cash. But then you have Wharton and the Pacific Company calling the shots when it comes to the actual running of the business.
Exactly. It's like Campeau's got the deep pockets, but Wharton's the one with his hands on the wheel, the split between who's putting up the money and who's actually in control. That's really at the heart of this whole legal battle. Now, when John Camp submitted their Schedule 14D to the SEC, which, that's the document they're required to file when they make a tender offer, they did disclose a fair bit of financial information about Campeau, including the fact that he had access to a $50 million line of credit from a Canadian bank. But here's where things get a little fishy. When it came to disclosing any financial details about Wharton or the Pacific Company, they basically just said not applicable and pointed back to Campeau's financials in one of the exhibits. It's almost like they were assuming that because Campeau was providing the bulk of the financing, his financial situation was the only thing that Prudent shareholders really needed to worry about.
That's an interesting take, isn't it? I mean, it sort of suggests this idea that, well, if the big money's there, everything else is kind of secondary. But Prudent's leadership wasn't buying it. They were like, hold on, how can our shareholders make a truly informed decision about whether to accept this offer if they have no idea about the financial stability of the people who are actually going to be running the company if this deal goes through?
It's one thing to have the money, but if the management team is shaky, the
Exactly.
whole thing could fall apart.
Totally.
So Prudent decided to take John Camp to court. They argued that this lack of information about Wharton and his company was a material omission, meaning it was something that was so important that it could have swayed the shareholders' decision about whether to sell their shares. They asked the court to issue an injunction, which is basically a legal order, to stop the whole tender offer process until John Camp came clean and disclosed everything properly.
And what happened?
Well, initially, the district court actually sided with John Camp and denied Prudent's request for a temporary injunction. Maybe they thought that since 80% of the funding was coming from Campo, the risk that the deal would collapse because of the other 20% wasn't enough to justify stopping what could have been a really good deal for Prudent shareholders.
Right.
But Prudent wasn't giving up that easily.
Oh, no.
They appealed the district court's decision to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay.
And this is where the Prudent case really becomes a landmark case in securities law. The Second Circuit actually reversed the lower court's decision.
Wow.
And granted a temporary injunction to put the whole tender offer process on hold while they took a closer look.
That's huge.
Yeah. That move by the Second Circuit was a really big deal.
Yeah.
It showed that they were taking Prudent's concerns seriously. They were basically saying, wait a minute, we need to make sure that Prudent shareholders are getting all the information they need to make a good decision about their investment.
Yeah, it really highlights how much importance the court placed on transparency and full disclosure when it comes to these kinds of transactions.
Absolutely. So the Second Circuit was like, hold your horses, John Camp.
Mm.
We're not convinced that everything's above board here. So what were the specific legal issues that they were really focused on?
Well, there were two main ones.
Okay.
The first, and probably the most important one, was this whole question of materiality.
Uh-huh.
Was John Camp's decision not to disclose financial information about John Wharton and his companies, the Pacific Company and JWDC, was that a material omission?
Right.
In other words, was it something that a reasonable shareholder would have considered important when deciding whether to sell their shares?
Yeah.
And then the second issue they looked at was whether there were any material misstatements or omissions about whether Prudent would still be able to qualify as a real estate investment trust or a REIT after John Camp took over.
Okay, let's start with that first issue. The missing financial information about Wharton. How did the Second Circuit decide that this was a material omission, even though Wharton wasn't the majority shareholder?
Well, this is where the Prudent decision is so helpful, because it really illustrates how courts apply this idea of materiality, which comes from a Supreme Court case called TSE Industries versus Northway. And that case basically says that a fact that's been left out of a disclosure is material. If there's a good chance that a reasonable shareholder would think it was important when deciding how to vote their shares, or in this case, whether to tender their shares in a tender offer.
Okay.
So the Second Circuit's reasoning was that even though Wharton's companies were only putting up 20% of the money for the deal, the fact that he would be in control of John Camp's day-to-day operations after the acquisition meant that the financial health of his companies was really important to whether the whole deal would succeed or not.
I see. So even though Campo was the one with most of the money, Wharton was going to be the one actually running the show. So his financial situation mattered a lot.
Exactly. The court understood that if Wharton's companies were in bad shape financially, even if Campo was still good for his 80%, the whole acquisition could still fail because of bad management or just general instability.
That makes sense.
And that risk of the deal falling apart or of John Camp being poorly managed, that was definitely something that a reasonable shareholder and Prudent would want to consider.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about a 40% premium.
Right, exactly. They'd want to make sure that that premium wasn't going to be wiped out by some hidden problems.
So the Second Circuit was saying that when you're deciding whether something's material or not, it's not just about who's putting up the most money.
Right.
It's also about who's actually in control and whether their financial situation could make the whole deal go south.
Exactly. Control can be just as important as money, sometimes even more so.
Okay, so what about the second issue, the potential impact on Prudent's REIT status?
Right. So the court was also concerned about some statements, or rather the lack of clear statements, about whether Prudent would still be able to qualify as a REIT after the acquisition.
Yeah, for people who might not be familiar with REITs, can you just quickly explain what they are?
Sure. A REIT is a special kind of company that owns or finances real estate that generates income. And they get some really nice tax breaks, but only if they meet a bunch of specific criteria and follow a lot of rules about how they operate.
So why would Prudent's shareholders care if the company lost its REIT status?
Well, losing that REIT status can lead to some pretty nasty tax consequences,
both
for the company itself and potentially for the shareholders.
How so?
Well, these extra taxes could eat into the company's profits, and that could make the shares less valuable, which means that 40% premium that John Camp was offering might not look so great anymore.
Oh, I see.
The Second Circuit recognized that if there was any uncertainty or misleading information about this REIT issue, it could definitely influence a reasonable shareholder's decision about whether to sell their shares.
Yeah, they'd want to know if this seemingly sweet deal might actually have some hidden costs down the road. So we've got these two potentially material issues: the lack of information about Wharton's finances and the uncertainty about Prudence REIT status.
Right.
Why did these concerns lead the Second Circuit to grant a temporary injunction to stop the tender offer?
Well, the key here is understanding how injunctions work in securities law.
Okay.
The Second Circuit was basically weighing the potential harm to Prudence shareholders.
Uh-huh.
If the tender offer went ahead without this important information being disclosed properly, they figured that if the disclosures were inadequate and material information was being kept from the shareholders, those shareholders might make a decision to sell their shares that they couldn't reverse later on.
Mm-hmm.
Based on an incomplete understanding of the risks. And once you've tendered your shares in a tender offer, you can't just change your mind.
And they're gone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that could cause some serious financial harm to the shareholders.
Yeah.
On the flip side, they also considered the potential harm to John Camp if the injunction was granted. But they decided that requiring John Camp to fix their disclosures, to give the shareholders the financial information about Wharton, and to clarify the whole right situation.
Right.
That was something that John Camp could do without really hurting their chances of going ahead with a tender offer once they had their ducks in a row.
Okay.
So they basically decided that it was more important to protect prudent shareholders by making sure they had all the information they needed before they made their decision, even if it meant delaying the tender offer for a bit.
So they were really prioritizing fairness and transparency.
Absolutely. This case is a great example of how courts can step in to make sure that everyone's playing by the rule.
So why is this case, Prudent Real Estate Trust versus John Camp Realty Incorporated, still so important today?
Well, it's important because it really reinforces how strict the rules are about what companies have to disclose when they're making tender offers under securities law. It's a clear message that courts are willing to use their power to issue injunctions to make sure that all material information, and that includes the financial situation of anyone who's going to have significant control over the company,
right,
not just the people who are putting up most of the money, all of that information has to be disclosed to the shareholders fully and accurately.
It's really about giving investors the full picture, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
They need all the pieces of the puzzle to make an informed decision.
Yeah, even if a piece of information seems relatively small, like Wharton's 20% stake in this case.
Right.
If it's relevant to who's going to be in control of the company, it could be really important for investors to know about.
Absolutely. This case is a reminder that companies can't just cherry pick what information they disclose.
Right.
They have a legal and ethical obligation to be completely transparent and to give shareholders all the facts that could reasonably affect their decision about whether to sell their shares.
So for all of our listeners out there who are studying to be lawyers or who are just interested in corporate law,
the big takeaway from the Prudent case is this disclosure.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
When it comes to tender offers, you have to make sure that you're disclosing all the material information.
Yeah.
And that includes not just the financial details of the people who are putting up the money, but also the financial details of the people who are going to be running the company.
Right.
Even if you leave out something that seems small, the courts might decide that it was material and that could have serious consequences, including potentially stopping the whole deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
This case is really important for understanding mergers and acquisitions and securities litigation.
Absolutely.
And it shows how important it is to do your due diligence and to be completely transparent when you're doing these kinds of deals.
Right. It really emphasizes that this concept of materiality isn't just about numbers. It's about understanding all the different factors that could affect a deal and making sure that investors have all the information they need to make a good decision. So as you continue learning about the fascinating world of corporate law, here's something to think about.
Okay.
Given how complex modern corporate structures are, with all their subsidiaries and different financing arrangements, how do you think courts are going to interpret and apply this idea of materiality that came out of the Prudent case?
That's a great question.
To make sure that investors are getting the information they need to make informed decisions in today's world, where these tender offers can involve huge amounts of money.
It's something that's still very relevant today.
Absolutely. It's a question that continues to shape how securities regulations are developed and enforced.
Definitely.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Prudent Real Estate Trust versus John Camp Realty Incorporated.
It was a pleasure.
It was great to have you.
Likewise.
Until next time.
Sounds good.